You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you started.
Happy fucking holidays! You're listening to The Speakeasy. In the studio today, we have repeat guest Aaron Polsky from Amore Amargo and Cripple Creek. And as well, we have Michael Rourke.
Hello.
My best friend slash drummer and brother slash bartender slash also member of Cripple Creek. The pop-up bar that we did last week at the basement of Lit Lounge, which was pretty festive, I will say, to go along with our holiday show today. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks, Damon.
All right. So, for those of you who don't know, we did a pop-up bar experiment. Why don't you run us down, Aaron, the idea of the experimental like pop-up bar that we did?
Well, I think what we were trying to do, I think you and I both view the current cocktail experience as somewhat akin to seeing like a classical music concert. Sit down, you're polite, you dress up, you study the menu just like you would read the playbill about the dead composer you're about to hear. Think about what you want, order it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We're rock and roll dudes. We kind of wanted it to be more about the drinks and the shared experience with your friends and just kind of having fun, partying, getting drunk, getting sweaty. So, yeah, we made our own cocktails, made them so that we could serve them in about 2 seconds a pop, served them in plastic cups, shitty ice, and just let people rock and roll and drink good drinks.
You know, okay, so a lot of times, like, especially even like last time you were on the show, what we talked about was, you know, obviously, like, different ingredients and, like, kind of, like, more experimental styles of cocktails. Kind of, like, avant-garde, you know, styles of making drinks. And, you know, like you said, you know, Mike and I, you know, play in a rock and roll band. And, Aaron, you're also a rock and roll dude yourself. And the whole...
I dabble.
I dabble.
like you said, the experience of going to a classic, like, cocktail bar is very classic, you know, and for us it's like it's hard to, well, not anymore, it was a challenge before to put rock and roll and cocktails together. It's like when you go to a rock and roll show, you can't get a good cocktail, but you'll get a beer in a plastic cup. And, you know, on the same or on the other side, if you go to a cocktail bar, you can't like really feel like you can rock out and have fun. So like we were trying to bridge that gap, right?
Yeah, I think we did it.
Yeah, so we did two nights. And we wrote out the menu like a set list, and we duct taped it to the bar. And you could buy the single, or you could buy the full album, which was the tasting menu. And I think it went over really well, the parts I remember anyway. Mike, what did you think about the experience?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to have any of these cocktails because I was stuck in a little DJ room. But
sorry, dude. Yeah. Sorry.
I drank a bottle of Old Crow though. The first night. yeah, it was a good time, man. I think you guys, you know, definitely achieved the goal of creating a fun atmosphere where people could actually get really good drinks. And from what I could see, people are having a hell of a good time. And I saw plenty of topless dudes dancing with each other.
I remember none of
Jack,
that.
We got to edit that one out.
At all?
Yeah, there was a lot of Mick Jagger dancing.
There was a bit of a Jagger off. Jag off.
Yeah, so some of the, for the listeners, some of the cocktails, why don't you run through some of them for us, Aaron?
Well, I think one cool one that we came up with was black trumpet mushrooms infused into creme de cacao and just blended with scotch and a little bit of absinthe. I think that's a great example.
That sounds awesome. Thanks for giving me one.
You had to have had one.
You had one. You just don't remember.
Yeah. I just don't remember.
You had a bottle of Pro first.
I remember trying to give you all of them. You refused. I was like, fine, let's just leave them alone. I'll have the Pro.
If you had a koozie big enough to fit over that Old Crow bottle, you would have been a lot happier, probably.
No, it's fine.
I know they make them. They must. They must.
I'll find one. Yeah. Will brothers make them?
Christmas ideas.
Probably. Yeah. I think that one was really cool. I mean, like, not, this is kind of weird because in this format of the show, like, I usually am not, like, part of the subject matter, but I think what we did was badass.
So, I very much agree.
Yeah. So it was like smoky scotch with mushrooms and absinthe. I mean, sounds like a camping trip to me.
You know? It's never a camping trip without scotch. That's what we're talking about, right?
Right, yeah.
not the mushrooms.
I mean, I think what's important is that we didn't dumb it down at all. Like, we didn't make any cocktails any more basic or more simple than we would in our respective bars. We did that same level in just a totally fun environment. And it's not to say that our bars or other cocktail bars aren't fun, but an environment like Lit. And people got their drinks fast, and they enjoyed them. And that was awesome.
Yeah. And we actually, I'd like the idea of, like, doing everything in plastic cups, too, to break some of the, like, pretension of, like, the perceived cocktail bar. Because a lot of times, like, what we talk about on this show, too, is the kind of the stuffiness of the modern, like, classic cocktail bar. And trying to break away from that is, like, very important right now. Especially because, like, there's, like, we often talk about even, like, the backlash in the press, people's blogs, you know. There's, for trying to do something so, like, on point and historical and, like, to perfection, you get a lot of shit for it, you know?
Right.
I mean, the exclusivity alone is, like, one of the biggest factors, but then, like, you know what I mean? Like, you end up being kind of chastised for trying to do something better than the rest.
It kind of ends up being, like, who can be the best Robert Johnson cover band. It's just like, at a certain point, you gotta move on from that.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like a pretty cool way of putting it, too. It's like, the blues, you know? When you play the blues, it's always going to be the blues. It's like, it's never, like, obviously rock and roll stems from the blues, but, you know, even when you hear, like, Zeppelin playing, you're like, wait a minute, okay, I can base that off of, like, the, like, 1-4-5 blues, like, makeup, you know, like, the composition. And a lot of times it's that way with cocktails, too. It's like, and not to, like, downplay this at all, but, like, for instance, like, the Manhattan and the Old Fashioned. Like, a lot of times when you go to a cocktail bar and you look at somebody, like, just even reading the recipes on a menu, you can be like, oh, well, that's, like, obviously, like, a Manhattan variation. Just in the same way that, like, you know, Since I've Been Loving You is a blues
right.
variation, you know?
Just like Lick My Love Pump is a mock.
I'm very glad that we got a Spinal Tap reference in there.
Yeah.
I think that's our first Spinal Tap reference, maybe. Except for the fact that... Yeah, thanks, Jack. Oh, we got another one too. All of our cocktails, we made sure we didn't want to completely overcharge, but we wanted to make sure that we covered our cost. A lot of times, you go to places and you'll be paying like 16, 17, or whatever bucks for a cocktail. So we made sure that all of our cocktails were 11 because in Spinal Tap
they go to 11.
They go to 11.
That's funny. That's the volume I kept the music at all
exactly.
night.
Right.
Did you try making 10 louder?
No, I just went to 11. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So what was the vibe that you tried to put out, Mike, with the music?
Oh, man. You know, kind of what I think was that's a tough question, man.
I can tell you what I told people.
All right, sure. Let's hear that.
Shit kicking rock and roll.
All right, then.
There we go.
But that's just my interpretation.
Hey, come on. You know, good. What I consider good music. You know, yeah. I actually got to play all the songs I liked and nothing that I didn't like. That's a good time in my book.
Yeah. You know, and it was cool because like the crowd that came out I think we like kind of hit the goal with we had a lot of like industry people coming out, but we wanted to get people out that were not necessarily like cocktail like denizens, you know, like we wanted to get people exposed to that was really the goal, I think, you know, like rather than like doing this thing for a bunch of industry people again, you know, like there's so
who
many
we love
who we love
who we love
you know, yeah, obviously, but you know, moving beyond that, you know, and trying to expand that you know circle of enthusiasts, you know, there's so many times like that, even like it keeps going back to the musical thing, man. You know, like originally, I know that we talked about having our menu like in different sections of. You guys are giggling, pouring whiskey all over the place. We talked about having like three different sections of the menu, having like the like strong classics or some kind of obscure classics that would be like your classic, you know, rock, you know, bluesy, like early rock stuff. Then like kind of moving into the 60s, maybe getting a little bit more experimental, and then like moving into the
like, Rush and the Yes,
the Rush and Yes of everything, and like going like really like which kind of bizarre,
which I did not play.
Right. Thank you.
I think if we had actually named the sections like you wanted to name them after the bass players from like one was the John Entwistle section, the other one was the Geddy Lee section for the experimental. I think then we probably would have been like forced to play some Rush and some Yes.
Oh yeah.
But I'm glad we reformatted the menu for that.
Me too.
Yeah, I just wouldn't have played it.
You just put your foot down.
Yeah.
What do you think, like, as far as the different bars? Man, these people are partying in here. It's awesome. They're very festive. What do you think about like the traveling like pop-up bar? Like, what are some of the challenges, the pros and cons of doing it in a place that's not necessarily a cocktail bar?
I would say getting all the liquor that you need. Aside from that, not that much. I think that's kind of the beauty of it, is that if you do all the prep you need to do ahead of time and just know the bar, then it's fine. Like, as long as you have plumbing and ice,
yeah,
you can kind of do whatever you want.
We can even talk about that. I mean, like, the whole ice issue, you know, people get so, like, hardcore about their like, ice program at their bar. And, dude, we used... like just regular, like I think it might have been like Hoshizaki, like half circles or whatever, but that worked out great, and
right.
You know,
it really worked faster.
Exactly. Right?
If we had had cold draft or 100 weight or whatever, it would have made beautiful cocktails in 7 times the time.
Yeah,
you know, it just would have taken longer, and that's not what that experience is about.
Yeah.
You know, I think what it did was it focused in on what was in the glass and nothing else. It's not about, it wasn't so much about the presentation.
Here.
Whiskey pass.
Whiskey pass.
Wasn't so much about the presentation. Wasn't so much about the technique. It was just, that was already there, you know? The cocktails were already made. The song was already written. We were just kind of just putting it out.
Yeah. It's a good point, you know. It's like, it's kind of like the, you know, like, what kind of turntable are you listening to this on, you know?
Right. When you're out at a show and people are yelling, like, there are speakers and they're good, but it's not, you're there to hear the music.
Yeah. There's the crowd, there's glasses clinking, there's, like, feedback, there's, like, all kinds of, like, noisy problems. I mean, but, like, the point is the music in the end. And, yeah, right. it's a great relation to the cocktail itself, you know? I mean, how many times have you been to the beach with, like, a bottle where you've, like, pre-batched, like, a Manhattan or a Negroni, you know? No comment, right? But, yeah, I mean, like, that's going to be room temperature without dilution, and that's your, like, or a fishing trip, anything, you know? Like, there's the end product is the most important thing. I mean, obviously, presentation and dilution, all this stuff, like, that goes into... you know, your whole list of like judgments, you know, but I mean, in the end, like, I think there's a lot more leeway with the classics like a Manhattan or a Negroni. We were doing some weird stuff that, you know, hadn't been tasted before, so we actually were able to get away with a little bit more.
Right. Like, and, I mean, people liked a lot of them. Not every drink was everybody's favorite, but that's fine. Like, they came out to experience it. Obviously, we strive to make drinks that we believe in, that we think are awesome, but we're not there to please all palates with all of them. But we want to give people the experience.
Yeah. I don't like every Brian Eno song, but I like Brian Eno.
Right.
It's like, I don't like every cocktail, but I love cocktails.
Yeah.
You know. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking with Mike O'Rourke and Aaron Polsky of Cripple Creek.
Woo! Woo!
You are listening to I Get by the Dead Stars on heritageradionetwork.org. Everything you do is not for you. Disappearing views of someone else's state of grace. Well, I know you're disappointed. I get angry when you move. There's a force that's out of focus, but it all depends on you.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we're back.
And thank you, Damon.
And thank you, Heritage and Roberta's and everyone. I think the world. Do you like that whiskey, Jack?
Yes. That's what I was thanking you for. Not the show. I don't care about that.
I just... Yeah.
What are we drinking? What are we drinking?
Well, we were just talking on the break about like what we like to drink during the holidays. Something that hits pretty close to home for me, anyway. I don't get to go home very often or really much at all for the holidays. So we've had this kind of longstanding tradition.
Isn't that because your parents tell you not to come home?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. All right. But... Like, no, you just stay there. You just stay there, man.
Just stay in New York.
So, being from Oklahoma and Texas area, over the last, I would say, like 4 years, we've had some barbecue shipped up from the greatest barbecue place in the world, Salt Lick Barbecue, in Driftwood, Texas, which is just outside of Austin. And so every year we would get this this package of barbecue. From the Nealon family, and it would be like brisket and ribs and sausage and all this stuff, and it was just badass. So what I brought in to the studio today to kind of fit along with that is the Bocconi's Baby Blue whiskey, which is 100% baby blue corn. It's not a bourbon because it's not aged in brand new charred oak barrels, but it is aged and is corn. So it could potentially be a bourbon, but it technically isn't. But it's from Waco, Texas, so it's right around the same area, and it's a really, really fantastic product that I tasted a while back, but actually, Aaron, this is like one of your favorites, right?
Yeah, I tasted it actually at a whiskey tasting at Fat Sow, and it really stood
also
out.
Also awesome barbecue.
Yeah, totally awesome. It really just stood out to me, man. It had like the softness, this almost sweetness to it. I don't know. It's not like most bourbons. You can definitely tell that it's
young.
Young, yeah. Which I like. You know,
that's a whole other conversation that we can't talk about on the air.
Dude, come on.
My parents are listening.
I will not discuss pending litigation.
No, I mean, like, I agree. Like, a lot of times, and not to not to whiskey slide, not to downplay any kind of like young whiskey or even unaged whiskey, but a lot of them are, you know, like, especially after being so used to like the like aged stuff, you know, like any kind of like aged bourbon or rye or scotch. I feel like this is kind of interesting too. Like the American palate's like so used to like the young unaged whiskeys, and there's so many of them out there now. I remember like 5 years ago, like the one which was the Georgia Moon that came in the jar, you know, which I still have
for easy pouring.
Dude, no, you just take a sip and then you throw ice in it, then you sip the rest. That's what mason jars are for. Come on, let's get real. But yeah, I mean, like over the past, like even like 4 years, it's really blown up. And I mean, I know that one factor of that would be that it's like easier, it's quicker to produce, you know, like you don't have to age it, you know, a lot of it's cheaper to produce too, you know, like you don't, like a lot of the cost,
not sitting on inventory.
Yeah. And it kind of appeals to a different market too. Like it can kind of appeal to the vodka drinker, the rum drinker, you know, cause it's a little bit sweeter too. But this one, for being such a young whiskey, it's fantastic, man. And in a different way. I mean, it's, I wouldn't say that, you know, like the Tuttletown stuff is even like young too, but it's got, at least it's done in brand new barrels. So it's got the more like woody, smoky, you know.
Well, and I think they're 5 gallons. So
yeah,
it's just a lot more surface exactly. area of char to the liquid. But I think that just like people have started embracing Blanco tequila and, you know, various varietals of agave and mezcal because they want to taste the differences in, you know, the base product. You know, they want to taste the product as opposed to the wood. I think that micro distilling of whiskeys has kind of gone that same route. And Koval is a great example as well.
Out of Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's also evident in rums too. I mean, like a lot of people like always wanted the aged rums, you know, to sip on, but I mean, have you had like Banks, you know, the Banks 5 Island or the, you know, like even Florida County 4, which is readily available, you know, things like that. Denizen, which is a great one. I'm not trying to name drop a bunch of rums right now. unless they want to sponsor the Heritage Radio Network. but I mean, but it is true, you know, like there are subtle nuances in the first product, the first run product. Then you start aging it, yeah, it's gonna change, and it's gonna, like, for a lot of people's opinions, get better, but it's really cool to taste the clean first run.
Yeah, totally cool. Love those products. Honestly, with rum, though, my favorites have been, as far as expressiveness and just interesting product, have been the rums from Renegade Rum, which were basically, like, found stockpiles that then were enhanced in other casks. And those are just super interesting. They basically just transcend product categories.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's talk about holiday stuff.
Yeah.
What do you guys, I mean,
we're kind of that for the holidays.
what did you grow up with in the household? Like, what did your parents drink? What did you sneak, like, into the other room? Mike, I mean, I know I've met your parents and hung out with them, and they're fucking awesome. And
yeah, they don't drink at all.
I mean, look, what were your holiday traditions? Like, what did you see your parents sneaking by you? This is a loaded question.
Yeah, I mean, not to get anybody in trouble. My parents weren't sneaking anything by. They were just, like, pouring it straight into the glass, like, in front of everybody. But I remember probably the first time I ever had beer was during the holidays when my parents and my uncles and aunts were all playing cards, and one of my uncles just, like, handed me a beer. I was like, I think I was like 12, you know, and didn't like it.
To be fair, you had the same type of facial hair.
Oh yeah, I was already 6'4 and had a giant beard, so, like, you know, it's but it's not, I'm not blaming
anyone's gonna say
beer. You know, I was buying beer at the
Everyone
grocery
store. Mike. When he comes to your bar, ID him.
Hey, Damon, I have to interject. We got a call into the speakeasy, but it turned out he thought he was calling a pawn shop trying to sell a stainless steel toy truck.
Did you not buy it?
No, I passed.
Dude, come on, man. That was actually, that was set up, man. That was your Christmas gift.
That you're going to buy yourself.
Yeah. We'll get you back. Just spot us for it.
That's amazing.
We're good for it, if you can't tell.
Wow, this is the best show we've had so far, I think. What is this? Like 81, 80, something like that? I don't know.
Anyways, yeah, so the holidays always reminds me of when my uncle snuck me my first beer. And then it was kind of a tradition from that point on. He would give me a beer every year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, holiday tradition.
Yeah.
Giving beer to kids.
Exactly. Since... I can't wait to pass it on one day.
Awesome. Yeah, Aaron, do you have any holiday traditions? It doesn't have to be booze related.
No, I think it was booze related. I think it was, it might have been Hanukkah. I'm the token Jew of the group. And I was like probably 11 and they gave me some wine. And that was probably like the first recorded me drunk shenanigan when I tried to wrestle like a 32-year-old who was also at the party. Like this little kid, and I was just like wasted and like egging him on, and it literally just turned into a wrestling match.
That's awesome.
How'd that turn out? No comment.
14 years later, I'm taking my shirt off everywhere again.
So it had a lasting impression. Just not sure what kind.
Well, I mean, like, mine, I guess, is, yeah, like, having some whiskey with friends, you know, just like we're doing right now, you know. The last, I think, like, just in general, like, the holiday tradition for my family has always been, like, being very untraditional. Like, after my brother and I moved out of our hometown, we ended up not doing the traditional, like, turkey on Thanksgiving, ham on Christmas. It was always, like, we'd have, like, awesome, like, Mexican food, or, like, barbecue, or, like, Chinese food. Like,
I miss the Mexican food Thanksgivings.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, because I don't want to think about, like red wine with, like, cranberry sauce and all that bullshit. I want to have a margarita, man. It's getting cold. I want to remember summer, you know? Yeah. So, come on, man.
Yeah,
let's have margaritas and Coronas and, like, sangria. Like, yeah, I guess that goes back to the red wine thing, but yeah. It's like the non-traditional holiday, and especially like for us living in New York City, it's like you can't really stay that traditional. A lot of people try to do it, but it's like, you know what? You got to come up with new traditions.
Well, dude, you know, I think that one tradition that's kind of in the works is sort of, you know, we're all in the restaurant industry. A lot of us don't go home. And it's fun to kind of get together and sort of ball out. And you know, like one year, a friend of mine, we all went on the shopping trip just to buy things, you know, for dinner. And we were like, we're going to get goose and like Kobe beef and all of these things and just like make the best feast we could make, like better than at any like single family tradition, yeah. Right? Or like gathering or whatever. Yeah. Just like really go all out. One of my friends came back from this trip and I think he was assigned a cheap bottle of brandy and a cheap bottle of rum to make eggnog, and he came back with a Methuselah of Paul Roget in his arms with a shit-eating grin on his face. I was like, dude! We had to put it outside for like 6 hours to chill it down, and then sabered it, and this like cork was like a baby's fist just flying down the hallway. I mean, it was amazing. But awesome. I think that's kind of fun, too, you know?
Was it Maxwell Britton?
It was not, but
I would expect him to do something.
That is
like
now a standing challenge to Maxwell Britton. You must exceed 6 liters.
Where the hell would you find one of those?
Astor Wines, and they rang a bell when he bought it.
It's a Christmas miracle. Or a Hanukkah miracle. It's amazing, man.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing we haven't talked about so far is like you're saying, like eggnog, but something that's very traditional for like the South and the West in this country is the Tom and Jerry, and which is basically it's a kind of an eggnog of sorts, but you make the batter, you put the rum and the brandy together, and any kind of hot thing. And do you guys ever make Tom and Jerry's? Have you ever done that before?
My friend Eamon really enjoys making Tom and Jerry's. He's got a bowl. He's got the whole set. I've actually never made one, but I would like to point out, last night I covered at Cienfuegos. It was my first live shift. And Tom Chadwick is an asshole because he put on an Alaminu eggnog on the menu. And I'm like, I get an order, like six drinks long, and one of the drinks was this eggnog. So I look at the spec sheet, and it's literally like, mix the egg yolks, rum, like sweetener or whatever, whip the egg whites separately, and it was just, it was brutal. I was like, I can't believe you did that. So, I love you, but we're also, you're an asshole.
Okay, so far in the show, how many people we called out? So it's Maxwell Brett and Tom Chadwick. Might as well throw Frank Cisnero in there somewhere.
Right. Oh, it was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Frank.
Hey, happy birthday, Frank. Okay, it looks like we're at the end of the show. we're out of time. Well, man, that was a productive show.
Yeah,
we called three people out, and we talked about kind of nothing except for rock and roll cocktails and the holidays, which I guess that's right. That's quite a bit of it's pretty much everything you it's can
like
talk about.
It's like an episode of Seinfeld.
Happy 17th night of Hanukkah, everyone!
Hey, I've got a new holiday tradition too. It's drinking this baby blue on the speakeasy every year from now on.
Absolutely, we'll do that from now on, Jack. I would like to say, happy holidays to everyone. Mike, Aaron, thanks for coming on the show. Jack, love you. You're a great producer. Yeah. Happy holidays to you and everyone else out there in the world. Have a great new year. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.